Welcome to Play the Advantage U.S. Men's National Team Podcast. I'm Danny Day alongside Cody Carlson. Cody and I were college soccer teammates, and we are big U.S. Men's National Team fans. This podcast covers everything U.S. Men's National Team related. Here we are once again, Danny Day alongside Mr. Cody Carlson. And we are back after window number two, the October window, Cody. And boy, was it an emotional roller coaster of games. We win, then we lose, then we win. People are calling for Berhalter's head. Now everyone's okay, or maybe they're not. A lot of ups and downs in this one. How are you feeling?
Yeah, doing okay. I guess I keep trying to tell myself could have been worse. But at the same time, it should have been better. And 7 points was the bare minimum that I was expecting out of this window. And to get 6 points, win both home games, and lose a horrible game, horrible performance down in Panama, was pretty brutal to watch and made me sick to my stomach. So I guess doing all right. How about you? How are you digesting these three matches here?
Yeah, we're recording on Sunday evening now after the most recent win on Wednesday. So we've had a few days to digest, think it over, you know, see some kind of have some rewatches of at least clips, that sort of stuff, from different players' performances from Wednesday, but from the window as a whole. And yeah, I guess I asked myself, are we going to have to just keep asking ourselves or saying to ourselves that, well, it could have been worse? Well, when are we going to get a window where we're just saying, man, what a window. What just an absolute slam dunk. And I don't know if we're going to ever get to that point. But we're still at the point.
Don't get your hopes up.
I know. We're coming into a tough window, you know, in the November window, which we'll get to as well. But, it's one of those things where, I mean, we talked about it prior to this window is we're – I mean, you mentioned bare minimum 7 points, and I think I was hoping for the same, but I think you and I both had concerns about whether we would actually get that because of maybe one particular factor, meaning Greg Berhalter. Yeah. I think we'll get into more about Greg, but I mean, in my mind, again, we were at the same conversation really at the end of the last window is had he not won against Honduras on the road, was he going to be fired? Had he not won against Costa Rica at home on Wednesday, would he have been fired? I don't know. It seems like at this point he's probably – I mean, because they won, you know, he's probably pretty secure. And I think at this point, I've mentioned this to you, is like whether or not he is the right guy for the job, I just want to see the U.S. make the World Cup. We got to get there and then see what happens there. You know, we've got a whole year – you know, to get ready for, you know, I mean, we won't have a whole year, like 6 months, but man, I just want to see the U.S. get there and have hopefully the players overcome the many challenges that Berhalter seems to be putting in front of this group. So that's where I'm at this point.
Yeah, I could see that. I could feel that as well. I think, you know, I'm looking at the standings though, and we're sitting in second place. I mean, anyway. It can be easy to feel like the world is falling down, but hey, even though we haven't been playing as well as we should be, and even though we have serious questions and doubts about our head coach, all that being said, the way the results have fallen in these two windows so far in CONCACAF, we're sitting in second place with 11 points. Mexico's in first with 14. Canada's right behind us at 10. But there's a little bit of a gap now. Panama's on 8, Costa Rica on 6, Jamaica 5, El Salvador 5, Honduras 3. Right, so a little bit of separation after two windows. We just, I guess, had wished that we would have had more separation is all.
Yeah, but, I wish we would. I mean, you know, had we actually played a real game down in Panama and had we actually played soccer, maybe we're separated that much more from Panama, right? But we see them only 3 points behind us, unfortunately. And that could swing really fast, as we know. So,
for sure.
Should we get into the games, though, and get some lineups and talk about each game?
Yeah, let's go for it. I'll kick us off here. So obviously the Jamaica game is first. That's a 2-0 win down in Texas in Austin. And so starting 11 was Turner in goal, Dest right back, Zimmerman and Robinson, Miles Robinson, center backs, Anthony Robinson left back. You got Tyler Adams at the six. You got Yunus Musa got a start, which we were stoked about, and Weston McKennie. What a midfield that was to see finally.
MMA midfield, finally.
That's right. That's right. And then we saw Pepe at the 9, which we were stoked about as well. Aronson at the 11. And then your guy, your favorite, Paul Areola, got the start at the right
wing. The man, the myth, the legend, yeah.
So I looked at this lineup, and I think the only difference that I had from my projected lineup and what I wanted was Weah in instead of Areola. But everything else I was very excited about. How about you?
Yeah, I'm on the same page there. I mean, I think as much, you know, before the game started, I was wondering, okay, why is Areola starting over Weah? But, you know, I couldn't gripe with the lineup too much. Again, you had Turner in goal. I think in my mind, Turner was going into this window, certainly, it may still be the number one. Bit of a goalkeeper debate now, potentially, after this window, to some at least. Sure. But yeah, I think I was happy with it overall, and just wanted to see the guys go out there and get a win. And well, 15 seconds into the match, right, we see a potential red card offense from Jamaica, and the referee, first time ever refereeing in this high level of a game, decides to not pull out the red card. It just gives a yellow when it was actually Areola who did get in behind. Right. So I'm thinking, right. Well, I mean, I guess this is exactly why Greg Berhalter started him. So I said, well, you know, I guess to Berhalter's credit, you got to give Greg the credit there, starting a guy, and Areola giving you exactly what you wanted. And I think on the whole, in this match against Jamaica, I think he did exactly what Berhalter wanted. Gave the speed, gave the energy, was relentless, and so did a pretty good job. I think overall.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with that. And he played 90 minutes, and so my hope was that that was all we were going to see of him. Yeah, but that was not the case. He got the start in Panama, and then he was going to start the third game as well, but ended up getting injured during warmups.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating because I was shocked to see him start in Panama after he had gone 90.
Right,
thinking, well, we're definitely going to be. They had pulled Aronson off. I know we haven't gotten to this part of the game yet, but we pulled Aronson and Pepe off to hopefully, right, in theory, be getting rest. Pepe's scored 2 goals. Let's get him some rest. Let's get Aronson some rest so they can start the next game. Again, I know I'm jumping ahead, but man, it is interesting to see. It seems as if Berhalter really does, for whatever reason, rate Areola higher than Tim Weah. Again, Areola has some qualities, but I think thankfully, when we get to that Costa Rica game, you know, I am thankful that Weah started.
Yeah, agreed. Well, let's talk about the central three guys, Adams, McKennie, Musa, trifecta, because for me, that was really, really pleasing on the eyes to see finally, you know, three young guys who have just tons of potential, tons of skill. They're nonstop runners. I mean, really was a joy to watch those three operate in this game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the midfield that I've been calling for, and I think you and I both have been wanting to see for so long. You had other guys who had been staking their claim as well over the course of the last year. But the difference that Musa, I think, brings to this midfield is his ability to progress the ball, that none of the other central midfielders, not even necessarily McKennie. McKennie can do it at times, but I think Musa has the ability to really progress the ball like no other midfielder in this pool does.
Agreed.
So it was exciting to see him do that.
Yeah, he's very smooth on the ball, right? He's able to receive and then dribble and drive past, you know, defenders and break lines on the dribble, whereas Adams isn't technical or skillful enough to do that on the dribble. And Weston, he can do it sometimes, but I just think Musa is at a higher level with that ability. But it was great to see him in there and you know, getting cap tied, right, for us finally.
Yeah,
right,
finally officially. Yeah, so. I mean, he was committed, but you know, it was good to just see him out there actually, Greg putting faith in him in a competitive game, right, because he showed throughout this window why he should absolutely be a starter for this midfield trio that Berhalter's putting out there.
Yep.
I mean, I think you saw it right on the goal, right? I mean, just his ability to progress the ball when he combined it with Serginho to get all the way forward and ultimately lead into that Pepe header.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely drove forward with it, dished it to Dest. And let's talk about that goal. I mean, Dest gets into that right flank there and whips in a great cross. And it's actually a little bit behind Pepe, so he has to adjust quickly and then redirect his header and gets it in to Andre Blake's diving right side, sneaks it in there. But great goal for the young kid. And I was jacked up when that first goal happened.
Yeah. I mean, you ride the hot hand. Love it. I mean, Pepe on fire, obviously had an incredible game, incredible second half, at least at Honduras to lift the U.S. to that win. And then you come this time and you see him get that goal. He's such a quality player. I mean, you can see why both Bundesliga teams, EPL teams, Ajax, there's teams all across Europe looking to sign this kid right now. Whether he goes, whether he stays at FC Dallas, remains to be seen. But man, he has the ability, just that knack of that true number nine to get around the face of the goal and bury the opportunities that come his way. So good cross from Serginho. I mean, not a great cross because it was a little bit behind him, but just a good combination play on the break too. All the way coming from Matt Turner's hands initially, right, to Serginho, to Musa, to Dest back into Pepe. So a good first goal to get things going.
Yep, absolutely. And then Aaronson gets the assist to Pepe on the second goal, right? And Aaronson gets in and on the left side there and slots one across. And Pepe gets on the end of it, slides in a little bit, and taps it in the net. So 2-0, thank you very much. And this is the one thing that you and I were talking about, saying for this first lineup in Austin, Texas, you got to start Ricardo Pepe in his home state and ride the hot hand. And that play worked out. So I don't know if Greg was listening to us or whatever, but I'm very happy that our ideas were validated there. And, I'm happy for Pepe and happy for our group for getting a 2-0, a win and a shutout.
Yeah, of our millions of followers this podcast, thanks to all those who follow. Yeah, I'm sure Greg is certainly one of them. It's a part of his daily listen, I'm sure. Thanks, Greg, for taking the listen in and really listening to what we had to say. No, I mean, I think another good example, though, of Aaronson, just, again, one of the most productive players right now in this attacking group. You can always depend on him, one, for the energy, the relentlessness from him, but two, something that separates him from a guy like Areola is his decisiveness and that ability in the final third. It's not maybe to the level, I think, where we always want it to be, but it's certainly better than the other players who he's going up against, at least competing within that pool. There's a great cross there, and a good build-up and a good cross for that goal.
Yep, absolutely. So the guys who subbed into this game then were Giassi Zardes, Luca De La Torre got a few minutes.
Yeah, looked decent.
Tim Weah came in for Aaronson. Shaq Moore came in for Serginho Dest on the right back, and then Kellen Acosta got some minutes in for, who was it, Adams or Musa? I can't remember exactly who it was. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah.
So those were our subs, and Jossie came in for Pepe, I think 60-something minute. So, and that was my hope, in the forward rotation. I think you start Ricardo, and then you give him 60, 70 minutes, and then you bring in a fresh Jossie. And then our thoughts were in Panama, you do the same thing. But then in Columbus, you bring back Zardes and start Zardes first and then bring on Pepe, a fresh Pepe after that. Ended up not working out that way, but at least in this first game it did. So any of those guys that subbed on impress you?
Yeah, I mean, I think really everyone had pretty solid games overall. And those subs, I mean, both Weah and De La Torre, I think both really provided some quality off the bench there. De La Torre was just smooth, wasn't anything crazy
Well, the game was already won by then, I think.
But securing that victory, right?
Yeah.
And but I did think Weah brought something on the wing that that is just, again, he's a different player than Ariel is.
For sure.
So I'm sure Greg looks at them as different players with regards to what they're going to bring to the game. But he does have that higher quality than what Ariola brings, in my opinion. And I think he showcased that in that match there in his 20-minute cameo.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, I think he had one that sticks out with me where he just absolutely blew past his defender, took a nice big touch past the defender and just burnt him for pace. And I said, whoa, Weah can really fly in some of these situations. So, yeah, fun to watch for sure. I thought, you know, Shaq Moore subbed on for Dest. I said, okay, that's fine, because I thought Yedlin was going to be the guy to start down in Panama. And so I said, probably giving Shaq Moore just some minutes here to fill in for Dest. And then, you know, Acosta came in. I was fine with that too. And but little did we know, I think anything else on that, on that Jamaica result before we segue in to the Panama game.
It was a good result. I think when we get to this Panama game, I think it takes us a look back to the Jamaica game thinking, well, how good did we really play against potentially what is the last, or, you know, near a team near the bottom of the table in Jamaica. You know, a little bit of a maybe overconfidence going forward after that game. But yeah, I mean, Berhalter said in his post game that, you know, if we think we've qualified for the World Cup now, we're going to go and get blasted in Panama. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, talk me through that lineup there, because it was a disastrous, I think a big risk and a disastrous just game for the U.S. down there.
Yeah. So, seven changes to the lineup from that game in Austin against Jamaica.
You know, Cody, you're a college coach. Do you ever make seven changes to your lineup? I know it's a different situation, national team, but seven changes seems like a bit much.
Yep. No, that's the only time you would ever do that is you just got completely blasted and roasted in the previous game, and you're like, I have to do a complete change because nothing is working. I can't remember a time that I've ever done that. Not on the college level or not on club level either. And so to watch Berhalter do it with our national team was a little bit like, oh, what is going on? And part of me is trying to give him the benefit of the doubt in terms of, hey, look, we got three games in this window, and we got to manage fatigue, we got to manage legs, you know, this and that. But, you know, you and I were in the mindset of, look, going down to Panama and trying to get a result there, we're going to need a tough lineup. We're going to need a lineup that is gritty, that is hard-nosed, and but also has quality. And instead, what we got was kind of the opposite, to be honest. So let's walk through it here. Turner stays in goal, which we were good with. Now you got George Bello gets to start at left back instead of Anthony Robinson. Zimmerman stays at center back. Mark McKenzie comes in at the right center back or maybe played left center back, sorry. But he played center back instead of Miles Robinson. So you got McKenzie in for Miles. And then Shaq Moore gets to start. We were hoping that Yedlin would get the start just based off experience and CONCACAF and whatnot. Acosta gets the start at the six. Musa and Legette are the eights. No Tyler Adams. No Weston McKennie. McKennie didn't travel.
Yeah, quad issue, apparently.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then, you know, well, I think they just didn't want to have to supervise and babysit Weston McKennie down in Panama.
Very well could have been, unfortunately.
COVID protocol violation.
Yeah. I hope Weston's figured it out. I mean, at this point, if you haven't figured it out, you don't deserve to be on the team. So, I mean, obviously, we didn't hear about anything from this trip, so hopefully he's straightened things out and he'll be better moving forward.
Yeah, I think we can assume that. So, but, okay, Acosta at the six, Musa and Legette at the eights. Leaving Adams off, right? And then Zardes was at the nine instead of Pepe. Tim Weah started on the wing, and so did Paul Areola. So Aronson was off. So that was the lineup. And initially looking at it, I was going, you know, it's not what I would have done in a few different players. I think I still would have gone with Anthony Robinson instead of George Bello on the left back. I still would have gone with not Dest. I would have gone with Yedlin instead of Shaq Moore.
Now the Robinson thing, right? That was a tricky one because he and Stefan both didn't travel because of the
UK right.
quarantine rules. But
that's right.
That was there Which was some is, question around that still, but you know, it is what it is, unfortunately.
Right. And then you know, not to start Tyler Adams and you go Acosta, Legette, and Musa was a little bit of a head scratcher for me. I mean, Tyler Adams, if he's healthy, he can go. I mean, he's the Energizer Bunny, and he's not going to, like, get tired, right? So the only reason he couldn't go is if he's injured. But if he's healthy, then you play him because he's got an engine like no one else on the team,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and then to go with Areola down there, I was like, okay, well, he's going to work. He's going to grind. But to go with him instead of Aronson, who I think works and grinds just as hard as him and offers more quality, I was disappointed in that one.
So. Yeah, I just do not get that. You start and you play Areola 90 minutes in the first game.
Yeah.
You sub Aronson off. You give him some rest.
Right.
And then you go ahead and you start heavy-legged Paul Areola again in game two on the road in Panama.
Yeah.
You know, whether humid, whatever the conditions might be. But, you know, for anyone going 90 minutes, then to do that again, as a winger in particular, you're running up and down the lines. The whole idea, I thought, subbing Aronson and Pepe off early was that those guys could go in. I mean, I could not comprehend that decision. And to be frank, if you have a guy who's scoring your goals in Ricardo Pepe, I understand. I think probably what Berhalter had done and his coaching staff prior to this window was, all right, we're going to start Pepe game one. We're going to go Zardes game two and Pepe game three. Well, if you have a forward who is as hot as Ricardo Pepe was, I think you got to just keep riding that. And I mean, I think that Berhalter really did make a mistake in not starting Pepe in that game. Now, would Pepe have had a good game with how bad the team played as a whole? Probably not, but it was still this interesting decision to see how that played out.
Yeah. I hear you. And you just said what I was going to say. I mean, you could have put, you know, Lewandowski up top and he wouldn't have gotten any chances. I mean, that's how badly we played. And we had zero attacking threats in the entire game. So you could have put, you know, whoever you want up top, and he wasn't going to get service from our
U.S. I mean, can you believe that stat, though? Zero shots on goal. Zero shots on goal. I mean, one of the worst
performances we've seen. Well, it was only five shots.
Five total shots. Yeah.
Five total shots and none on target. I mean,
nothing that were even close.
No. No. It was it was a bizarre and ugly game to watch. I mean, pathetic, like truly pathetic game to watch. And you know, let's hand out some credit to Panama because they absolutely deserved it. They played with the heart. They played with the intensity. They played with the passion. Everything they needed to go out and win and get it done on their home turf. And USA just seemed like it was tucking the tail between the legs and scared and playing timid and just like hitting the panic button. And truly, truly kind of an embarrassing and disappointing performance from our guys.
It seems like, Cody, and I don't know how we get over this and change this for the U.S. men's national team, but so far when we've gone on the road, I mean, it is just completely different style of play from what we play at home. I mean, you're always, in generally speaking, you're going to play better soccer at home just because of your home. You're more comfortable at home, your field, your atmosphere, you got your home fans behind you. But it was as if we had forgotten how to play soccer when we went down to Panama City last Sunday, right? It was just abysmal to watch. Players, I mean, Berhalter got it completely wrong and made way too many changes. But at the same time, the players also played terrible. I mean, the guys who were out there didn't perform. So it was a combination of not having good chemistry with the guys out there on the field, as well as the guys not having good first touches, not playing crisp passes, not getting on the end or making any kind of attacking runs that were threatening. It was all in all just a performance that hopefully will not come back to haunt the United States.
Yeah, I agree. Well, the big issue I think that most of our problems stemmed from was Acosta, Leggett, and Musa in the midfield. And that three, that group of three, for whatever reason, they didn't bring it. They didn't have it that night. I'm an Acosta fan. I like the guy. He proved it to me in, you know, in the Gold Cup.
Yeah, he was amazing in the Gold Cup. Yeah.
That this guy is someone that I want in a cage match. He'll go to battle. He'll scrap. And I don't know what happened to that version of Kellen Acosta, but the one that showed up in Panama City was not him. Same thing with Leggett. I'm an LA Galaxy fan. I like Leggett. He offers some things that are quality to the LA Galaxy, but then obviously also to the U.S. men's national team. But he was a ghost. He was completely ineffective. And now you throw Musa into this mix as well. And you're saying, okay, Musa, you're 18. You go run the show in the middle of the park. We need you to take this on in Panama, and it's on you, buddy. And he didn't do it. So without Tyler Adams there, you know, without Weston McKennie there, the midfield was completely lost. And because of that, we had pretty much zero quality attacks generated throughout the duration of the match.
Yeah, and you look at, you know, Panama, I believe, only rotated two guys. They started nine of the same guys they started in their first match. You know, it was as if we felt like we were just – our pool is that much deeper than Panama's, which I don't know if you can say that after this necessarily, but so we're going to rotate seven guys. And we come in there, and you don't start your captain. I mean, you're already missing Pulisic, Reyna, John Brooks, right? Three kind of, in theory, somewhat locked in starters for the United States, or potential starters. So then you have Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie, two of your other really primary players. Weston McKennie doesn't make the trip, but then you don't start Tyler Adams, who's your captain. And you and Berhalter said in his post game press conference that he didn't feel comfortable having Tyler Adams go the full 90 in all three games. Well, I guess understandable. Maybe he's working with Leipzig and on that. I mean, knowing that Tyler Adams has had an injury history, but man, if that guy is healthy and ready, he's got to be out there. The midfield was completely lost. Acosta, Leggett, Musa just did not look the same as McKennie, Musa, and Adams did in that first match.
Yep. So this transitions kind of into the subs that were made.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a horrendous first half, and Panama dictated the flow, the rhythm, the chances, everything. It was all Panama. And what particularly struck me was they had two back-to-back corner kicks where he almost Olympico'd Matt Turner.
Yeah.
Like almost a straight whipped in far post goal from the corner. Right. They did that twice back-to-back. And so that should have been warning signs for what was to come. Because clearly they were whipping it in swinging corners with a lot of danger and packing and crowding the 6 yard box for Matt Turner and causing chaos there. And ultimately that's, you know, skipping ahead, but that's how they get their goal. So really frustrating that we had two warning shots fired there and we really didn't heed the warnings for that goal we conceded.
And I know we're going to get to the goal, but what has happened to, and maybe you guys do this at Redlands too, but it seems like things shift over the years in terms of tactics on defending and attacking. But defending corners, it seems as if many of the top teams, including the U.S. men's national team now, does not put defenders in the posts. So why is that?
I think it's each team's choice what they want to do. Good answer for that. I think it's whatever is comfortable for that group, for that team, whatever that coach thinks is the best. I mean, there's pros and cons to everything. If you got two guys on the post, now that's two guys that are not able to go, you know, battle and mark up an opponent, but they're there to obviously clear it off the line if it hits their side and the keeper can't get there. So it's kind of a, you know, do you do it or do you don't? I don't know. But obviously on that goal, let's just talk about the goal real quick while we're here.
Yeah.
But the goal we scored, I mean, or conceded, I say scored because Zardes scores an own goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, when you look at that clip and you freeze the frame there, and you know, there's no those near post Panamanian attacking guys who are like
three guys yeah. just right around Turner, right, and no one marking yeah. them at all.
Right. So, you know, maybe that's because Turner says, I don't need these guys marked. I don't need extra bodies in front of me. If the ball's whipped in right to them, then I'm going to get it, which, okay, fair enough. But ultimately it ended up not working out. In hindsight, you're like, yeah, we should have been marking those guys. Right. It's easy to say that in hindsight, but also the counter argument, like I was saying, is if you mark those three guys, now there's six guys right in front of Matt Turner. And so there's more bodies in the way for him to try to come out and box it or collect it, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, in hindsight, it's easy to just go, we should have been marking those guys. What are we doing?
Well, you know? I mean, the problem, I mean, and again, this is what a lot of top teams do, but they use the zonal defending, right? There's no, I heard Landon Donovan say on Grant Wall's podcast, there's no such thing as zonal marking, right? It's zonal defending. Because if you're zonal, you're not just technically marking anyone. And that's what the U.S. is doing. They're not marking anybody. They're just guarding a zone, protecting a zone. And it did certainly, obviously, did not work on that particular corner. Zardes heads it into his own goal.
Yeah. Well, he got on the stat book, didn't he? He got a goal.
Stats, baby, stats.
stats. All right, so let's dive into these subs and the rotations that – sorry, not rotations, these subs that Berhalter made, because for the first time, I really, really got pissed at Greg Berhalter for these decisions. I really was frustrated with him.
Yeah, so, you've never been really on the fire Berhalter band.
This was the first time that I was really like, what the hell is he doing? So when it came to these subs, you know, first I was a little bit upset about a couple players in the starting lineup. I was saying seven changes, geez, that's a lot. What's going on? But I was still like going, okay, I still think this group can do it. After the first 45, I was going, hell no, this is awful. We need to change it now. So we did. We brought in Tyler Adams right from the half, and Brendan Aaronson as well. So Aaronson came on for Areola on the wing, and Tyler Adams came in the center of the park. But instead of subbing out either Kellen Acosta or Sebastian Legette, he takes out Yunus Musah. And that was the first red flag for me. And that's a huge head scratcher because I'm going, Yunus played okay. Acosta and Legette were trash. So why are you taking out Yunus Musah?
Musah was the only player in that first half who actually had a couple of positive progressing plays. Yeah. Everyone was on the whole really bad, but Musah had like two or three actually progressive plays that were good. And Legette and Acosta did not.
So that's the first real gripe I have with, you know, decision by Berhalter. I don't understand that you're taking out one of the three midfielders and you're taking out the one who's been playing the best, or, you know, take out Acosta or Legette. I mean, they were playing like crap and you take out Yunus Musah. So that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't care if he played more or whatever in the previous game. I don't care if, you know, Legette didn't play at all in the previous game and he's full and, you know, fully rested and ready to go 90 for this game. If you're not playing well, you got to make a change. So that was the first one that I had an issue with. And then, you know, Ricardo Pepi subs in for Zardes up top, which I was fine with. I didn't think that was, I mean, he maybe could have come on sooner, but honestly, like we were talking about, Zardes just didn't have any service. He didn't have any real chances because we couldn't hold on to the damn ball. Right, so it wouldn't have mattered, you know. So the Pepi one, the Pepi sub for Zardes, it is what it is. I don't think that was, you know, I mean, I'm happy he came in, but it wasn't like a game-changing sub, ultimately.
No, I mean, it wasn't. I mean, we were playing so bad. We were creating zero opportunity. I mean, both Bello and Shaq Moore, their crosses were – the crosses that they had generated nothing. They either didn't – they weren't even to anyone, or they got cut out by the first defender. I mean, it was hard to watch.
Yeah. So, Here's where I get really, really pissed at Greg Berhalter's decision. We're down 1-0. We're chasing the game. We got zero going for us in terms of attack. He subs on DeAndre Yedlin for Shaq Moore at right back.
At right back, and it's, yeah.
What is he doing? I mean, okay. First of all, Serginho Dest, could he have been the guy to come on and create something going forward? I'd like to think so. If you're putting on DeAndre Yedlin, it's because you're up a goal and you're trying to lock it down, not right. Go chase a goal. He's never going to be the creative guy to go up and get us a goal. That's not DeAndre Yedlin. So I'm going, what the hell is he doing? Why are we doing that sub? That makes zero sense to me. And then added on, you know, to make matters worse, when Yedlin comes on, he's absolutely piss poor. And I wanted him to start this game, but he came on and was worse than Shaq Moore, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, so literally offered us nothing, gave us worse than what we were getting. So that sub, that was a real head scratcher for me. You're not going to put in Serginho Dest here when we're trying to chase it. That showed me that, you know what, this game doesn't really matter. We're only focusing on our home games to try to win those, and away games down here in Panama. If we lose this one, so be it. We're not really trying to win here, which is a BS mentality. But so there's that sub. And then the other one that I get really livid about is you take off Tim Weah and you got Christian Roldan comes on and you leave Matthew Hoppe on the bench. This is a completely perfect situation for Hoppe to come in. He's hot-headed. He's got a little bit of cockiness, arrogance. He loves playing in these types of pressure moments. He loves being the underdog. He loves these types of environments where the fans are there all over you and stuff. He eats that up. And he's a scrappy guy who's just going to battle and go to war and go make something happen out of nothing. And instead, you put on very, very average Christian Roldan and you put him on the wing. What are we doing? And what are we doing?
Yep. And Roldan, again, nobody looked good. We'll preface this statement with that. But Roldan, he added nothing. Yep. He tried to play a few balls forward. There's zero completion on his passes. So it was you grade a manager or a head coach on their starting lineups, their tactics, and their subs, right? And I think Berhalter got an F in all those categories on this day.
It was horrible. Yeah. After this game, I'm going, what is he doing? I mean, to me, those decisions he made with the subs showed me that he didn't feel like he needed to go out and push to try to win this game or even tie it. I think they had already kind of accepted that if they lose in Panama, then it's no big deal. We're only going to focus on winning our home games, which to me is such a soft, like anti-American type of mentality, right? So the you know I've been giving Berhalter the benefit of the doubt over the past months, and then like I was telling you just now, this is the first time really ever that I've seriously started to doubt what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some senses, this summer we had the wool pulled over our eyes a little bit. You know, we see two trophies, we're lifting trophies, man, we're celebrating, we're beating Mexico twice in the finals. Hey, it's huge to win those tournaments, win those cups. And we're on this long, long unbeaten streak. But, man, to see that Panama game was the lowest moment for the U.S. men's national team since Cuba when we didn't qualify 4 years ago. And it was 4 years to the day. Funny enough.
It's like some weird like curse on the same day.
October 10th, not a day we want to play soccer, apparently. Future schedulers, just keep that in mind. Do never schedule again on October 10th. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it is frustrating to see the amount of talent and that we do have with this team playing at the highest levels. And for whatever reason, it seems like sometimes we go out there and it just looks like a team that has never had played together, that well, in some senses, that's, you know, partially Berhalter's fault as well, is because of the how many lineup changes he's made over the course of the last year, 2 years. But that doesn't even know how to play soccer. And yeah, it seems as if we have this group of guys who can do so much. And we saw that in glimpses throughout this window, only at home, certainly not on the road. But it seems as if we have Berhalter almost holding us back at times, and more often than I would like.
And I'm starting to agree with you more and more.
So, I mean, at this point, I don't think it makes sense. I mean, had the U.S. gone and lost this game at home against Costa Rica, I would have felt no other option but to fire him and find someone new. I don't know who that new person would have been.
But see, that's the main issue.
Yeah, that is the issue. But I would have said Bob Bradley or Brian Schmetzer. Anyone at this point is going to do a better job than what Berhalter is doing, because if he had gotten only, again, this is a hypothetical because it went on and beat Costa Rica, but if he'd only gotten 3 points from this October window when you have two home games, obviously that means you're dropping points at home and on the road. And we'd only gotten 5 points in the first window. So that would have been eight points out of 18 games, or 18 possible points. It means he'd dropped 10 points.
Yeah.
I would have felt that there'd been no possible other option in order for us to potentially qualify, other than to get someone else in there, because again, we've got a great group of players, but we continue to struggle. And it seems like many of those struggles are coming from the head coach's decisions. So thankfully we got the win. And again, I think at this point you're so far into qualifying, you're almost at the halfway point, that you cannot fire the coach at this point. You have to have Berhalter and his staff figure it out, so that you can go forward and get into the World Cup. And I just want the players to overcome these obstacles that are being put in front of them. And it's just so frustrating, though.
I agree. But I think, you know, I pulled up the standings again here, and I'm looking at them, and that is the reason why he's not going to get fired either, because he's sitting in second place. Right.
Sitting. But had we lost that game against Costa Rica,
yeah,
we would have been in fifth.
Right. So, yeah, definitely. So transitioning over to that third and final game of this window.
Can we, before we get to that, can we talk about some peak CONCACAFing from Panama? You know, at the end of that game, just superior time wasting from what we've seen, I think, in any other point so far. And not just the players in the field, but you have fans running onto the field, multiple balls being kicked into the field while play is going on, ball boys taking the balls, kicking the balls out of the way of U.S. taking throws. I mean, it wasn't as if the U.S. was going to score, but it was peak CONCACAFing, you know, at its finest. And so credit to Panama on that.
It really was. And we got to learn, you know, our boys, we got to learn the tricks of the trade a little bit, because this is what happens. I mean, there's no VAR, right? We live and die by referees' decisions and atmospheres and environments like that. And I mean, you got ball boys who are clearly you know, selective in how quickly or how slowly they get you a ball or not, right? And even at the end, like you're saying, they just punt it away.
Yeah.
So I found it comical. I mean, I was already at the point of just like hysterical laughing at how bad we were, that I was like, this is like the icing on the crap cake for us. So
absolutely.
But okay, so transitioning into that third game then, against Costa Rica at home, and we're in Ohio.
So tell me before you get to the actual starting lineup, tell me who the real starting line, or the projected starting lineup is.
The projected starting lineup?
Yeah, before we get to who actually starts.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who I wanted, but it was, I mean,
not our projected, but what Berhalter had put on paper in the pregame, you know, before the injury.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So Stefan was in goal.
Yeah. Dest, which was a bit of a shock.
Yeah. Stefan instead of Turner. Dest right back. Miles Robinson back in at right center back. Chris Richards gets a start at left center back instead of Walker Zimmerman. And then Anthony Robinson is back in for George Bello on the left back. Adams at six. Musa and McKenney ahead of him. And then you got Ricardo Pepi at the nine. You got Brendan Aaronson, and then Paul Areola was on the lineup sheet.
Man, he is just – must really, like, be invited to all of Greg Berhalter's Christmas and Thanksgiving dinners. And, I mean, he is on the definitely the good list. Who's getting a lot of presence at this year? I mean, I couldn't. I was mind blown. Him starting in Panama was mind blowing enough for him to then start again. I mean, it makes me think that Berhalter actually rates him above any of the other way. Not above Hoppy, above Weah.
Aaronson. Like, how is Ariola playing more than Weah and Aaronson?
Yeah.
Make it make sense, Greg. I don't understand.
Yeah.
But, for Ariola ends up getting injured in the pregame in warm up, and so Tim Weah gets the nod ahead of him, which is I feel bad kind of saying it, but I was a little bit pleased with that.
I think most of the US fans probably were.
Yeah. So, but so that's the lineup we went with. The big changes for me that were kind of like, was Richards getting a start over Walker Zimmerman, and Walker Zimmerman had captained us down in Panama. And I thought he was okay. I thought Zimmerman had played all right over the first two games, and so for him to just suddenly get booted out and then put Chris Richards in, I was a little bit going, okay, we'll see. But I was also, excited to see what Chris Richards can bring. The other one is obviously Zach Steffen getting the nod ahead of Turner. And for me, I'm going, man, goalkeeper changes. Look, we've called this champagne problems in the past where you got good goalkeepers and it's like whoever you end up choosing, you can't make a bad decision. But at the same time, like, I love Matt Turner now. Big Matt Turner fan. And to see Zach Steffen just get thrown in there ahead of Turner, I'm going, okay, I don't fully understand it. It almost seems like, yeah, we're just changing it up just to change it up.
I think this is another one of those things where Berhalter, and going into this window, had kind of made up in his mind that he was probably going to be starting Steffen in this match back in Columbus, right, where Steffen had played third match at home. He was going to be rested. He was going to be ready. I mean, not that goalkeepers necessarily need rest per se, like other players in the field, but I imagine he had it in his mind. Not saying that justifies the decision, but that's my guess. Now with Richard starting over Zimmerman, I mean, this was an interesting one, the center back debate, right? You have Zimmerman, who wasn't included in the initial roster, gets called in to replace John Brooks and ends up starting the first two games and actually plays pretty dang well.
Well, not only that, but he gets the captain's band. So that's another thing I'm going a head scratcher with. Okay, Greg, so you don't initially call up Walker Zimmerman. He's not even included in your initial lineup yet. Now he's wearing the captain's band.
Yeah.
Make that make sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if he's good enough to wear the captain's band, why is he not initially called up? I don't understand.
Yeah. I think Zimmerman, though, has clearly instilled confidence with Berhalter and the staff that he's going to have to be included moving forward in all of the selections for the pools moving forward.
I hope he's ahead of Tim Ream, even if,
yeah,
but I you never know. So,
yeah, but I I think the Richards thing though was maybe one of those things where again, you had Berhalter thinking, okay, I've got my center back duos. I'm going Zimmerman and Miles for game one. I'm going to slot in Mark McKenzie for game two. Mark didn't play very well down in Panama, but he already kind of had Chris Richards in mind to play game three fully rested and was going to slide in next to Miles Robinson. So he had Richards and Robinson coming in fully rested, I'm guessing was the mindset. And again, I mean, I'm a big Chris Richards guy, so I was excited to actually see him get a shot because, we see him play very well at the club level, but we're never going to actually get a chance to know how good he could do at this national team level unless he gets a chance to play. Yep. So I was excited to actually see him get a shot. Big moment for him. And, on the whole, just real quick, I'll say I think he held his own. I don't think he was great, but I thought he actually – I mean, he connected 90% of his passes. A lot of the passes were fairly simple, but, in the match, he actually did have a few line-breaking passes, which that's one of the things that the center back pool is lacking a little bit. I mean, John Brooks is known for his line-breaking passes, although we haven't seen that from him in a while. But Chris Richards actually can do that too, and had some good moments with that. Had a couple of good step ups defensively. I thought held his own. I mean, it was an intense match that he came in. I thought did okay, but wasn't great, but did fine.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with that. Well, let's transition though into the, you know, kind of the timeline of this game, because Richards. Yeah. Speaking of Richards, he had a rough go a little bit. You know, you're starting your first game with the national team, right? And Costa Rica gets a goal in the first minute, man.
Brutal. Just a brutal. Well, brutal start for any, you know, both Steph and him, Richards, who were newly into the kind of the team. And then all of a sudden they're giving up a goal. Kind of both are right near the play there.
Yeah.
What did you see in that? What did you see in that goal?
Well, Dest kind of loses the guy on the dribble down there. On his side, and cross comes all the way in and bounces to the back post, and a Costa Rican attacking player, it's Keisha Fuller, is there to hit it first time. I think it's Keisha Fuller.
Yeah, who is their youngest player at 27 years old, right? Zach Steffen on the other side is the United States' oldest player at 26 years old. Just to kind of give you a gauge of how young the U.S. roster is out there. This is our best roster compared to just how old Costa Rica is, 27 yeah. being their youngest player.
Right. No, that's a good good stat to definitely keep in mind. But yeah, this ball comes to the back post there, and he one times it right at seemingly right at Steffen, and then there's a Costa Rican, I think it's their nine. I can't remember who it is, but he's kind of in the way. He's kind of like shielding the line of sight for Steffen. And so Steffen sees it late, and by then it's too late to dive even to really keep it out of the net. And we're calling for offsides, but Dest is actually keeping him on because he ran down all the way to the end line and then tried to make a play there. He ended up, I think, falling down. And so he kept the line at the goal line. And so yep. he was onside there, and despite protests and even VAR would not have overturned yeah. that decision. Yep. So, but I'm going, and I'm sure you were too. The world is falling down. We're losing 1-0 in the first minute. We just yep. had an awful performance in Panama, and now we're losing 1-0 at home to Costa Rica. This is it, man. If we lose this game, Berhalter's done. He's out. And we need to throw spaghetti to the wall, see what sticks, because this is not good.
Yeah, I mean, so. it was as bad of a start as you could ask for, especially after that Panama match. You're thinking, coming, okay, we got to have a good, let's have a good first five, first 10, first 15 minutes, let's come out strong, really enforce our game. And all of a sudden, boom, a few things, you know, fall the wrong way. I mean, everything on that play went bad, right? Steffen yeah. comes off his line. Maybe, you know, it may, might have been the right decision, but he heads the ball, right, yeah. wide. Serginho Dest kind of flicks it, but then a credible flick back into play by the Costa Rican attackers, gets all the way to the end line, the cross, the players, you know, kind of blocking Steffen's view. He can't react, and it's in the back of the net. And, yeah, I mean, as bad of a start as you could ask for, but in some ways, man, it seemed as if, like, the U.S. actually it was able to respond quite well, and it almost forced us into a sense of urgency. Knowing, I mean, yeah. you have 90 minutes to play still, but it almost forces you into this. Okay, well, we got to start now. We cannot yeah. wait. We got to start going. We're going to get into the attack mode. And that's what they did. I mean, that was one of the best halves of soccer, actually, I think, that we've played in a long time.
Yeah, I agree. And it does beg the question, like, if we didn't concede that goal, were we still going to play with a sense of urgency and intensity right. and tempo and all that? Or were we only doing that because we were forced into having to doing that? Right. Or were we, if we'd have, you know, not conceded so early, were we just going to fall into the dreaded, you know, horseshoe shape and pass it around the back and zero attacking threats. Right. But, you know, credit to the guys, right. They responded well and they really bossed the game. So, and let's fast forward to Serginho Dest's left-footed banger. I mean, yeah. that's why the guy isn't in the starting lineup. I mean, he's not in there for his defending, right? We cheat a little bit with him as a right back just because he's not the most athletic guy. I mean, he's not going to stay with you know, some of the best attacking guys on that side. But what he offers going forward is can be world class. And so what we saw from him there, cutting inside onto his weaker left foot and just absolutely lacing it into the top left 90, was really, really fun to watch.
What a sequence, right? I mean, that started all the way from the back with McKinney, Adams combining, playing all the way back to Stefan. Stefan, not the greatest of balls, but plays it wide to Robinson, who has a nice heading save in. This is all, again, mind you, right near our own 18-yard box. Saves it to Chris Richards. Chris Richards, good control off like the half volley. Plays it back wide to Robinson. We work it all the way up. A good combination play. Moose is able to eventually get it after a long cross. Plays it back to Dest, who nails it past Navas into the top corner. I mean, you saw, you know, today, I mean, Sergino Dest starting for FC Barcelona, not as a right back, but he's starting as their right winger in the front three. You see Barcelona obviously watching these U.S. games, and they're thinking, well, maybe we can use Sergino up a little bit higher. He's got that ability to finish. I mean, he does. And he brings that attacking flair, that creativity. And it'll be interesting. I'm not saying that Sergino should start as a right winger for us, because I think for us to get our best 11 in the field, I don't know if that's our best option. But finding ways to get him into the attack and providing cover at that right back position, whether that's Adams or whoever it might be. I mean, he is just so dynamic going forward.
Yeah, he definitely is. But man, what a goal. I mean, I was stoked when he scored that goal. I mean, that's his, second career goal for the States, right? And both of them have been bangers.
Yeah.
And then talking about, you know, him playing right wing for Barcelona today. Well, Yunus Musa is usually a right winger for Valencia, but they must have seen him playing centrally. He got some time for Valencia in the center of the park. Right. So, who knows? Maybe Greg habla Espanol and he's talking to those Spanish teams.
Doubt it.
Doubt it. But, yeah. Well, before we get to the second goal in this game that I just wanted to point out, was Miles Robinson. You were going about the age gap, the age difference. Miles Robinson makes a careless square pass across to Chris Richards.
The death pass, man. He teaches that in U11, U12. He said, you know, do not give the death pass. That's just a nice, slow, square pass between the center backs.
Yeah.
Or anyone, really, with that in mind. I mean, that was a definition of a death pass.
Right. But Brian Ruiz, what is he, like 37 years old or something crazy for Costa Rica? Yep. He steps in there and he goes breakaway one versus nobody straight to Zach Steffen. And
the amount of space that Ruiz had in front of him, nobody around him. I mean, it was as if you could have just snapshotted him on the field. There was like nobody
30,
else in the field.
40 yards. Like 40 yards.
Yeah. Maybe a long ways. Yards. I mean, I think you're exaggerating slightly, but
he had a long way to go, and the old man, poor guy, could not keep up. He could not get there, and he blew it. Miles Robinson just chased him down and got there, and then Ruiz tried to cut him, but Miles got there in time and didn't, like, sell out. He, like, stood his ground and then poked it away. He, like, read Ruiz's
incredible
cut defending. Poked it away.
Well, maybe he knew that Ruiz is left-footed, so he had to cut back to his left foot to get off the better shot, but, I mean, incredible defending by Robin. Yeah. I mean, after making a horrible mistake, to come back and make that play was massive.
Well, I think that play right there was a microcosm for the age gap of these two teams, and it was almost comical. Yeah. Like, I think Miles probably like wanted to show off his athleticism.
Yeah, totally.
Like, all right, I'm gonna give this pass away just so I can show off how fast I am and recover this. And
I think you're right. Like, definitely.
But yeah, that play kind of stuck with me a little bit. The goal. Let's talk about the goal, and they're marking it as an own goal, which is probably accurate. The goalkeeper, you know,
unfortunate for Weah. I think we all know Weah contributed to that, but how does it get there?
Well, from what I can remember, the final action is Sergino Dest slips in Tim Weah down into the right side of of the opponent's box there. And Weah hits it first time near post, hits the low post, and then comes off basically the back of Moreira, the goalkeeper.
The sub. Right? We didn't talk about that. Navas goes off on injury. Like, right? No one really knows what happened, but gets subbed off at halftime, which proved to be massive.
Yeah. But yeah, it comes off his back and trickles in, and Tim Weah celebrates, rightly so. And we go up 2-1 at home, and we're all stoked.
Yeah. And then, well, and that, just to reference it, that play, that whole sequence started with a completely unnecessary Rabona from Sergiño Dest, kind of in the middle of the park. Instead of just hitting a nice left-footed pass over to Weston McKennie, he decides to go full Rabona, you know, and a little bit of flair. That's Sergiño Dest for you, but I thought it was pretty comical. I mean, he hit it perfectly in right and stride for McKennie, but one of those things where he loves to do those things. He's starting to feel himself out there in the field and is ready to just do whatever he wants, wherever he wants in the pitch. And sometimes not to his benefit, but this time it worked out okay.
It's a double-edged sword, right? Yeah. I mean, you want Sergiño Dest on your team so that he can – do some of the things that he does, like his left-footed banger on Keylor Navas into the top 90. Now, is he in there to do Rabona's useless, unnecessary Rabona passes in the center of the park? I guess if he keeps or getting assists to Ricardo Pepi, then sure, I suppose he's entitled to a useless Rabona from time to time. But yeah, I could see why he drives people a little nuts with some of that. Those, you know, I mean, but that's him. That's him. Right? That's his style. That's his flair that he needs to play with. He's a flashy player, so we let him do it.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, but he ultimately gets the assist. I mean, even though it ends up going down as an own goal, he gets essentially the assist on the play. Right, a good through ball to Timothy Weah, who just blasts it home, and Weah, who was on the next dead ball, about to be subbed out. So he certainly made the most of his opportunity there to blast that one home. And, yeah, it takes a bit of a deflection off the post and the goalkeeper's back. But good for Weah and deserving for his play. He wasn't off the charts phenomenal, but I thought that he was very good in this game and provided that just speed and the spark and the quality that the U.S. needed in order to get the win. And so – glad to see him get the result there.
Yeah, I agree. Happy for him. I thought he played well too. The subs that came on, Zardes came on for Pepi up top. He did okay. I don't think he did terrible, or I don't think he did great. But that's a situation where I'm going, all right, yeah, let's get fresh legs at the nine and run at some tired opponents. Tired and old opponents. Right? Yeah. So
yeah. Well, at that point, you're just trying. They were trying to close out the game, right? Trying to just get the W. And Zardes can provide that defensive work that you can depend on from him.
Yeah. Yedlin subbed on for Dest, if I remember correctly, right back. Then you had Busio. Gianluca Busio got some minutes. He came in for Yunus Musa, I believe.
Yeah, and Busio, man, he was one of the guys, him and Hoppy, who both came into this match. Busio, I thought, was outstanding in the final 15, 20 minutes. I mean, for a guy who's never played in a World Cup qualifier to come on and help close the match out, was just super, super accurate on his passes, was clean, was able to kill, you know, was savvy, was able to kill the game off. And so I was very impressed. I definitely want to see him in this next window as well, as with how we saw both Acosta and Legette perform again. I know Acosta is more of a six, Busio is more of an eight, but with how, the way Legette performed, you know, it's almost as if Legette and Roldan kind of played themselves out of spots. And I think Busio potentially has kind of slided himself into a higher ranking in my mind for one of those eight spots.
Yeah. Definitely moving up the ranks in my book as well. So the other one, Hoppy gets in the 73rd minute for Tim Weah. And so we get to see Hoppy have a run out. How do you think he did?
Yeah, I think he was fine. Gave some good energy. Almost had the assist on actually a really good save. He kind of half bikes it from keeping the ball going out of off the end line. It goes right to Ricardo Pepi, who almost had an incredible Cruyff to a shot goal. A great, great block by the Costa Rican defender to keep that scoreline at 2-1 at the time. But, you know, so Hoppy, I wanted to see more of Hoppy in this window. Again, I was frustrated we didn't see more of him, but I hope he gets to start getting some more minutes with Mallorca so he can get into a good offensive rhythm. And hopefully we see him again in this next camp, because I do rate him higher than Areola. Again, we just didn't get the chance to see much of it. You look back at the Gold Cup, though. I mean, Hoppy was debatably our best attacking threat a lot of that Gold Cup. Areola certainly wasn't. And yet, for some reason, we're seeing Areola getting way more minutes right now. Again, this is not to just bag on Areola, because, again, he had a pretty decent game against Jamaica. He just does not – he does not provide that finishing threat that we need from our attacking three players. And whereas I think Hoppy has that killer instinct. So I hope that we get a chance to see more of him, even though, again, depending on who's available for this next window, he may not see any time, but I want to see him continue to be included in the squad.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think Hoppy offers the same type of energy and work rate that Areola does. Same as Brendan Aaronson, same energy and work rate that Areola does, but they both have more quality. So, I am perplexed as why Areola keeps getting the nod ahead of those two. But, just looking back at these stats or at these subs, Walker Zimmerman subbed in for Brendan Aaronson at the 86th. Right. So, you're just taking off a winger there and putting in another center back just as Costa Rica is trying to pump things forward and trying to get something.
It was dangerous, man. Those last 5-10 minutes with stoppage time, it was a little bit sketchy in the back.
Yeah. And then the last sub was actually Zardes came on for Pepe at the 87th. So that went longer than I remembered. So Pepe played 87 minutes, and he was just barely getting Zardes on for the last few. Which, you know, I mean, if you're going to sub a 9 on, give him more time. I don't know.
I think it's pros and cons
of it, I suppose. But
I mean, Pepe, you know, had the really good first game, and he didn't really get much of a chance in Panama. I mean, he got 20 or whatever minutes, but again, nobody played well in that game. And Pepe really, I thought, despite not scoring in this one, where everyone's saying, oh, well, he didn't score. I mean, why didn't you, you know, it's one of those things where he was actually serving well as a kind of a distributor, that target forward who could actually check back, hold the ball, one time it off to other midfielding attacking players. And actually, I thought did a pretty good job throughout the game and against Costa Rica. So I was okay with Pepe going as long as he did. And
sure,
I mean,
Zardes, I just thought that Zardes, I mean, he was in his, you know, in the state of Ohio where he plays his club football.
Yeah,
like why don't you give him a chance? I mean, that's the whole reason we wanted, or, well, that's one of the main reasons that we were pumping for Pepe to start in Austin, because it's home state of Texas. Like, hey, like. I had penciled this one as, why don't we do the same thing for Jossie? But
I mean, that's,
it's not.
Yeah. I mean, fair. But I think, you know, just the way that things went in Panama and then him getting the own goal. I don't think that was going to happen, but
sure. So,
yeah,
well, that's, I mean, that wraps up. We sealed it out. We get 3 points there at home against Costa Rica.
I will say one final thing about like those last few minutes. It was okay, one of the key things now that needs to be worked on for this team is also figuring out how do you close out games, because we're in stoppage time. We're in the last minute of stoppage time. And I'm saying, okay, get it down to the corner. Get it to the corner. They're kind of messing around with it a little bit in the back, trying to play through the midfield, which is fine, possessing. But, man, if you're not super crisp, super sharp, you have a giveaway, which is what happened, then you commit a foul. You're allowing one last chance for Costa Rica to pump everyone in the box. And, I mean, again, they had two of those chances in the last 5 minutes of the game. Thankfully, neither of them resulted in anything. But I think the U.S. needs to figure out how to do a better job of closing those games out and not putting themselves in those opportunities where they could get scored on.
That's completely valid. Definitely. Real quick, just a couple players that I was impressed with. couple players who did not impress, and then players who I thought were about what I expected.
From the window as a whole, or from that game?
Yeah, from the window as a whole. Now,
okay.
So players who impressed overall, I thought Walker Zimmerman was one. I thought Anthony Robinson was solid. I thought Yunus Musah was good. I thought Ricardo Pepi was good. Those players impressed me. Players who did not impress: Sebastian Legette was a ghost. Christian Roldan, nope, not good enough. Kellen Acosta, I was really displeased with and disappointed with. I had higher hopes for him. DeAndre Yedlin was below his normal quality and let me down. Shaq Moore was not good enough for me. George Bello was not good enough for me. Mark McKenzie was not good enough for me. And maybe it's unfair that those guys are only, you know, based off the Panama match, but they deserve it.
You can only grade them off of what you see, man. And I think that your assessments there are fair. And I think that brings me back to the question of, I mean, we're going to maybe look forward here briefly, but question marks as to this roster selection in general. I know I was calling for Joe Scally to be in there, and he wasn't. And then we see George Bello, unfortunately, put in another performance that was left a lot to be desired. If Joe Scally continues to perform the way he is in the Bundesliga, it has the flexibility to play right and left back. I mean, in my mind right now,
it's a no-brainer.
We don't have a good right or left back backup. And you have Serginho Dest, you have Anthony Robinson. And after that, there's no clear backup on either side in my mind. So I think you hope that he's healthy and you can call him in, even though he's got no experience. But hey, screw experience, man. We've seen that guys, Pepe, no experience, comes in and scores goals. Guys can come in and make it happen, man. You just got to give him a chance.
Legit, tons of experience, was a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Doesn't matter, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
And then the last grades of players who played about to the level I expected them to. Areola, I mean, he played to what I expected him to. Tyler Adams, he was solid. He did his thing. Weston McKennie did his thing. He was solid about what I expected. Aronson, Weah, Miles, Chris Richards, Matt Turner, Zach Steffen, I thought they were all about what I expected them to do. Any of those guys you disagree with, up or down, in terms of impressed or
do we have a goalkeeper controversy now? What do you think?
I mean, I think so. I don't know what's going through Greg's head. So, I'm still a Turner bandwagon guy. I think he's playing, you know, day in and day out versus Steffen not seeing the field as much for Man City. Right. So I think you go with a guy who's playing with confidence, and I just rate Matt Turner is a better shot stopper. Ultimately, that's the most important thing that you need. The guy who's better at preventing the ball from going in your own net. So if he's good at the best thing, if he's better at the one thing that is the most important thing for a goalkeeper, then I don't see why we shouldn't play him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll say, you know, Matt Turner had, you know, a couple of shaky moments in that Panama game with regards to his feet. So I think that that's where people could look at Matt Turner and say that was – he had a couple of pretty bad giveaways that resulted in almost getting scored on.
Granted,
ended up making great saves.
Yeah. You know who was also not very good with his feet, in my opinion? Tim Howard.
Yeah.
But keep the ball out of the net, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this whole, like, obsession with, oh, goalkeeper is silky smooth with his feet. Man, that's such a secondary or even, you know, third, fourth, more important characteristic to have, man.
Sure.
So,
yeah, no, I think even Matt Turner in that Panama game made a couple of, you know, key stops. There was one that ended up being called offsides, but I remember seeing it. And he makes just the one-handed save, just rock solid. And it's like, man, that's an incredible save.
You know how many goalkeepers would have gone down there? Like, fault, you know. Anticipated save, tried to dive early or whatever. Matt Turner stands his ground, you know, and then just sticks a big right paw out and blocks it. And like, it doesn't even seem phased. I mean, he stands there like almost like a hockey goalkeeper that's just like standing there with a bunch of pads on. And he's like, yeah, I'm not falling over. I'm just going to take this wherever it hits me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, it was surprising to see Steffen come in and start that game. I mean, he's not playing for Man City. Granted, he did play for Man City this weekend and earned his shutout. and did make a one on made a one on one save. It was a really nice save.
Yeah.
So I mean, I do hope that Stefan can start getting some more playing time, if however that comes at Man City. But the fact of the matter is, as long as Ederson's healthy at Man City, Stefan's not going to be playing. And I want, you know, I mean, Turner's stats and his performances for the U.S. just don't lie. And I want to see him in goal for the U.S. At this point, until something changes where we actually see Stefan consistently getting minutes and his performances are consistently at a level that's higher than Turner's, which I don't see at this point. So it'll be interesting to see in this Mexico Jamaica window what decisions are made on that front.
Yeah. Well, anything else about this window that we needed to touch base on before as we kind of wrap up this window?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think you mentioned, I mean, it could have been worse. I mean, we are in second still. I mean, you look at Panama going up to play Canada, Canada just absolutely trouncing them 4-1 up on Canadian soil. Granted, again, that's in Canada. But, I mean, Canada looks legit. I mean, Canada goes and ties Mexico at Mexico. I mean, those guys are the real deal. But then they go and they tie Jamaica. So, but Canada still hasn't lost a match yet. No one's beaten them. So they're the real deal. For the U.S., I think as we look to go forward here, I hope we get Pulisic and Reyna back healthy. I would love to see a full-strength squad at some point. But at this point, I mean, both guys are still injured, still not playing over the weekend with their club teams. I am not holding my hopes out that either of them are necessarily going to be available for this next window. Or if they are available, they're not necessarily back to full strength or full fitness or whatever, full sharpness by that point. So in my mind, this is where guys like Brendan Aaronson, guys Timothy Weah are going to have to continue to step up. A guy like Matthew Hoppe hopefully gets a chance. So it'll be interesting to see how that part of the depth of the squad, I think, plays out. But excited for this next window. Disappointed a lot in many facets of this window, but thankful that we're still in the position that we're in. Wish it were better, but again, it could have been worse.
I think that's very well said. I don't have too much to add. Trying to see the positives and everything, but like I was saying earlier, this was a wake-up call for me in terms of reevaluating my opinion on Greg Berhalter and his decision-making. Frustrated with him, and certainly with the Panama match, but also still believe that we can do this, and excited for these upcoming November qualifiers. And obviously the November qualifiers are two games in the window instead of three, but they are, you know, we get to play Mexico at home in Cincinnati. So we'll bring them up there November 12th into the cold in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hopefully that can be definitely an advantage. And then, on Tuesday, November 16th, we're down there in Kingston, Jamaica to play for the second game of the window. So we could talk more at a separate time, but really, really hoping for 6 points in those two games. But if we can even tie Mexico and beat Jamaica away, 4 points there, that's probably something that's I'd be okay with. Losing to Mexico at home is going to be really, really not good. And dropping points at Jamaica is also not acceptable.
I agree. You look at the Jamaica game. You have to get a full 3 points there. And again, this is a two-match window. Again, we'll get into more in a future podcast. But it's a two-match window. You got to play your best 11 both games. Zero. There's no need for squad rotation. The fact of the matter is you got even an extra day of rest in between these games too. So there should be no need. I mean, who cares about what the clubs are saying? Man, these guys are playing for the national team. They're coming in to play for the U.S. men's national team. You get the most you can out of that squad. Do not care about squad rotation, and you play your best 11 both games. And whoever is healthy and available, you play them. Hopefully they get the full 6 points. Am I super confident in that? Not at this point, unfortunately, but I'm excited to see we're playing our biggest rival in Mexico, and then hopefully also going down and getting a good result in Jamaica. So we'll see what happens, man, but it's going to be an interesting next month as we build up to that.
definitely agree.
Well, good. Well, this has been another episode of Play the Advantage, U.S. Men's National Team. For Cody, I'm Danny. Go USA.